Welcome. You are listening to AfterSight. This recording is intended solely for individuals who are blind or have low vision.
Hello, everyone. It is Tuesday, the fifth day of November in the year 2024. It's election day. So if you haven't done so already, please exercise your right and your responsibility as a citizen. Get out and vote. I thank you very much for joining me today for readings from the Christian Science Monitor. Obviously, because it is election day, we will be focusing on a number of election-related stories. I'm going to begin with a kind of a chronology of what's happening today, up to date. And this comes to us from a whole raft of staff reporters for the Monitor who are covering different parts of the country. So it's 2024 Election Day Live Updates. Welcome to the Monitor's Live Election Day Updates. Throughout the day, we will be providing short takes on how voting is going, who's turning out, and why, and ultimately, who are the winners and who are the losers. Control of the White House, the U.S. House, and Senate hangs in the balance. We're also tracking statewide ballot measures on abortion rights, immigration, and marijuana, among others. Monitor reporters have fanned out to the key battleground states and will provide regular updates, as will our anchors in Washington and Los Angeles. In an election like no other in American history, the stakes could not be higher. Please check back regularly for updates. We're currently at mid-afternoon on the East Coast, so I'm going to recite to you a few excerpts from these reports that are coming in, starting at 9:45 Eastern Time this morning, where voting is underway in Arizona. Good morning from the Southwest. Voter centers opened at 6 a.m. local time in Arizona's Maricopa County, one of the most populous counties in the country. The more than 2.5 million registered voters here make up over half of the swing state's voter base. Maricopa became a hotbed for discredited election conspiracies in 2020. Election officials have since shored up security, transparency, and new equipment. They're also appealing to voters for patience, saying factors like a longer than usual two-page ballot and a new change in state law on election tasks are expected to cause delays. "We ask you to be patient," said Zach Shira, assistant county manager for elections and external affairs, at a Monday press conference. "Let us do our job, and we will be transparent about what we have done and what we have left to do." Meanwhile, Stephen Richer, the county recorder, is bracing for post-election litigation given ongoing scrutiny of the battleground state. Joe Biden won Arizona in 2020, the first Democrat to do so since 1996. Yet President Biden clinched victory by less than one percentage point, 10,457 votes. Beyond the White House race, Arizonans will also get to vote their conscience on abortion access and illegal immigration. Next, we turn to a report at 10:15 a.m. Eastern Time, which is titled, "In Georgia, a Question. Will Young Men Show Up at the Polls?" Polls are now open across much of the country, and Monitor reporters have been watching the sunrise from polling states in the battleground, polling sites in the battleground states likely to decide this election. In Georgia, Patrick Johnson is en route to rural Baldwin County. In 2020, President Joe Biden became just the second Democrat to win the state in 40 years. While predominantly African American, the county is far from deep blue. It elected President Joe Biden in 2020 and Senator Raphael Warnock in 2022, both Democrats. But in 2018, Republican Governor Brian Kemp lost the area by 0.3%. If former President Donald Trump is going to take Georgia back, he will probably have to carry Baldwin County, as well as the booming Atlanta suburbs, where Patrick will be heading later today. Law and order are a big priority for voters there, and Patrick says he's going to be looking for how many young men turn out. With young voters starkly divided by gender this election, Mr. Trump put an added focus on that demographic in the closing stages of the campaign. He will be hoping a late endorsement from Joe Rogan, host of the most listened to podcast on Spotify, will give him an election day bump. As Patrick says, quote, "I know women are going to show up. I know the older guys are going to show up. Are the 20-year-olds?" Then we turn to a report that came to us at 10:35 a.m. Eastern Time that's titled, "Trying to Get to the Pivotal Swing State of Michigan." I'm in Toronto heading to the battleground state of Michigan. My flight to Detroit was outrageously priced and much more expensive than Monday or Wednesday flights. So I thought maybe I'd find a plane and airport full of Americans heading home to vote. So far, I'm finding a microcosm of the American electorate and of the globe watching this historic race. There is Dean Craver, a barber from Central Florida, who voted early and for the first time at age 32. A dual Canadian-American citizen, he registered as a Republican right after the first assassination attempt on Mr. Trump. "This is the first time I felt like I had to vote," he says. "Trump is a leader who stands up for Americans." Then there is Mark Goodwin from California, who voted for Harris 2 weeks ago. "It's a vote for sanity and stability," says the retired technology worker and registered Democrat. Then there's a registered Republican, a retired military medic, who is heading to Washington, D.C. today so that he can vote against Trump because he says, quote, "It's been put in sharp relief how unqualified he is to be a leader," unquote. Ahmed Musa, heading back to Minneapolis, says he's always voted Democratic. Originally from Somalia, his favorite president of all time was Bill Clinton. But this year, he's not voting at all. "It's all the same, same, same," he says. When I asked in a packed elevator if anyone was American heading to the polls, one man answered, "Nope, we are Canadians, praying." Next, we turn to an 11:30 a.m. Eastern Time report titled, "What Are the Big Issues on States' Ballots?" Not to be forgotten this election day is that a number of states are voting on some pretty important ballot initiatives. Not only will we likely know the results of these votes quickly, unlike other important races being voted on today, but they will also tell us a lot about how a majority of the country feels on divisive issues such as drug legalization, the minimum wage, and abortion rights. Here's a quick rundown of which states are voting on what issues. On abortion, since the U.S. Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade in 2022, the U.S. Constitution no longer protects a right to abortion. That does not prevent state constitutions from doing so, however, and 10 states are voting today to enshrine in their constitutions a right to abortion. The states are Arizona, Colorado, Florida, Maryland, Missouri, Montana, Nebraska, Nevada, New York, and South Dakota. More than perhaps any other issue, abortion-related ballot measures have the potential to drive voter turnout in a decisive direction today. Next, we look at drug legalization. Four states are voting on legalizing marijuana: Nebraska, North Dakota, South Dakota, and Florida. In Massachusetts, meanwhile, voters are deciding on legalizing psychedelics. As of April 2024, recreational use of marijuana is legal in 24 states and in Washington, D.C., according to the Pew Research Center. 14 states have legalized marijuana for medical use only. Marijuana use is still illegal under federal law. Psychedelics are legalized in Oregon and Colorado and considered the, quote, lowest law enforcement priority in major cities such as Seattle, Denver, Minneapolis, and Portland, according to Psychedelic Alpha, an independent newsletter focusing on psychedelic medicine. Next, we look at citizenship voting. Illegal immigration has been top of mind for voters this year, and Republicans nationwide have been pushing for citizenship requirements to vote. You must be a U.S. citizen to vote in federal elections, but you generally aren't required to show proof of your citizenship when you vote. Today, eight states, Iowa, Idaho, Kentucky, Missouri, Oklahoma, South Carolina, and Wisconsin, are voting on whether or not to adopt that requirement. Instances of unauthorized immigrants voting are, quote, so rare as to be statistically non-existent, Aaron Reichland Melnick, senior fellow at the American Immigration Council, told my colleagues in September. Then there's the question of minimum wage. Three states are voting to increase their minimum wage in Alaska, California, and Missouri. Massachusetts voters are considering whether to raise the wage for tipped workers to the state minimum. Meanwhile, in Arizona, voters are considering a ballot measure that would decrease the minimum wage for tipped workers. At 12 noon Eastern Time, we have an article titled, How One State is Protecting Its Vote and Its Voters. Even though I'm reporting in Charlotte, North Carolina today, I was thinking back to Sunday when former President Bill Clinton canvassed for the Harris-Walz ticket in my native Augusta, Georgia. Security was understandably tight, and it made me think, what type of protections are being taken on election day? This morning I had a brief conversation with Richmond County Board of Elections Director Travis Doss about what security looks like, both in terms of the ballot and the folks casting their vote. This interview has been lightly edited for length. So, the first question, what measures are being taken to secure votes? Regarding the actual votes, Georgia uses a paper-based system. Voters mark their votes on a tablet and then print out a paper ballot that is then scanned into a tabulator. Neither the vote-marking device nor the scanner are connected to the internet. At the end of the night, the memory cards from each of the scanners are brought to a central tabulation area where the votes are uploaded. All voting machines and scanners are sealed throughout the voting day. So what about the security of voters? Regarding physical security, Richmond County has worked with the Richmond County Sheriff's Office to have our 43 polling locations divided into zones where we have direct contact with the zone captain if we have any issues. Also, tonight, we will have deputies at polling locations when the polls close to make sure there are not any type of issues while the poll workers complete their closeout procedures. Next question, how does security tie in to election integrity? As far as election security and integrity, everything that we do is open to the public to view and witness. We use multiple chain of custody forms, and all voting equipment has multiple seals that are verified before, during, and after the voting process. There are multiple checks and balances in place to include verifying the numbers of people who voted is equal to the number of ballots scanned. All voters must present one of six forms of required photo ID. Georgia takes voting security and integrity very seriously. At 12:27 p.m. Eastern Time, the New Hampshire voters are crossing party lines. Hello from Belknap County, New Hampshire. Since 2008, this county has traditionally been a Republican stronghold. But this election day, signs show that voters here are now leaning over party lines. John Miller, 88, a retired school maintenance worker, switched his affiliation from Republican to Democrat 2 years ago. He still supports Republicans in some local races, but, quote, I wasn't going to vote for Trump, says Mr. Miller. He's caused more trouble than anybody. After working for Donald Trump in 2016, Mr. Miller backed Joe Biden in 2020. Today, he says, he's hoping to prevent another Trump term. I prayed every night that Kamala Harris would take care of it. Philip Smith, a finance professional and lifelong Republican, voted for Nikki Haley in the primaries, but chose Kamala Harris and Tim Walz today. He doesn't believe Donald Trump's widespread false rumors of fake news. I'm tired of the divisiveness, Mr. Smith explained. I'm hoping for more moderation on both sides so that we can turn back to getting things done in this country. Frederick Ninas, a retired physician, renounced his Republican affiliation years ago over what he saw as dramatic changes within the party. Having previously supported candidates such as Mitt Romney in 2012 and Hillary Clinton in 2016, Mr. Ninas expressed concern about democracy's fragility following January 6. Quote, democracy is fragile. It's important to vote for the right person, not for us, but for our grandchildren, he cautioned. At 12:38 p.m. Eastern Time, Georgia officials link poll site bomb threats to Russia. In the crucial swing state of Georgia, election officials have reported false bomb threats to some polling sites this morning, and they have linked those threats to Russia. Nadine Williams, Director of Registration and Elections in Fulton County, said they have received five non-credible bomb threats, resulting in the temporary evacuation of two polling locations at local schools Tuesday morning. The Atlanta News first reported. Officials in Fulton County, home to Atlanta, have requested to keep two polling locations open for an extra 30 minutes tonight, CNBC reported. At a press conference later in the morning, Georgia Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger said the bomb threats had come from Russia. They're up to mischief, it seems, and they don't want us to have a smooth, fair, and accurate election, he said. Anything that can get us to fight among ourselves, they can count that as a victory. At 12:46 p.m. Eastern Time, we turn to an article titled, Independent Voters Are Likely to Determine Who Wins Nevada. In Nevada, tight races could be decided by people like Laura Beth Gjadowski, a registered independent voter. She cast her ballot for Vice President Kamala Harris shortly after polls opened on Election Day in Las Vegas. I'm a gay woman, so I want a representative that's going to not take away rights, that's going to ensure that me and my people in my community are safe, she says while standing outside Allegiant Stadium, a vote center in the shadows of the famed Las Vegas Strip. Ms. Harris and former President Donald Trump have been jockeying for Nevada's 6 electoral votes with frequent campaign stops in the Silver State, where about a third of active registered voters are nonpartisan. Heading into Election Day, more than half, or 53.5%, of eligible registered voters in Nevada had participated through mail ballots, absentee ballots, or early voting. Of those votes already cast, 33.8% came from registered Democrats, 37.7% from registered Republicans, and 28.6% from nonpartisans and other political parties. Today's big question is how many more voters will turn out, and whether nonpartisan voters will break for Democrats or Republicans. Just past 9 a.m. local time, 28,846 people had voted on Tuesday in populous Clark County, which includes the Las Vegas metropolitan area. Among them was Diana Serna, who voted for President Joe Biden in 2020, but this time cast her ballot for former President Donald Trump. The mother of a 5-month-old son, she says her decision came down to inflation and the war in the Middle East. There was no war when Mr. Trump was in presidency compared to the last 4 years, says Ms. Serna, who moved to Las Vegas from Lebanon 12 years ago. At 1:10 p.m. Eastern Time, we turn to Pennsylvania. This Pennsylvania county's voters have a history of picking presidents. When campaign organizers woke up today in eastern Pennsylvania, they probably breathed a collective sigh of relief at the bright sun and clear blue skies. Weather, at least, won't keep voters from the polls. For weeks now, voter turnout has been the name of the game here. Workers for Vice President Kamala Harris's campaign in the Keystone State say they knocked on 807,000 doors last Saturday alone, while former President Donald Trump's campaign has struggled to organize its ground game. Mr. Trump, however, has the star power of billionaire tech entrepreneur Elon Musk, who's running a controversial $1 million voter registration giveaway and has spent significant time stumping across the state for the Republican nominee. Polling shows that Ms. Harris and Mr. Trump are separated by a razor-thin margin in Pennsylvania, which carries 19 electoral votes. Here in Northampton County, voters have backed the winning presidential candidate in all elections but three for over 100 years. Former President Obama won the county in 2012, which then swung to former President Trump in 2016. In 2020, President Biden won the county by less than 1 percentage point, or 1,233 votes. Once the headquarters of Bethlehem Steel, a giant American steel manufacturer for almost 150 years, the area has reinvented itself since the plant closed in 2003. There's been a steady population growth, and the Latino population, mainly Puerto Rican and Dominican, has quadrupled since the 1990s, even while other formerly industrial Rust Belt communities have shrunk. Sam Dow, a Harris voter in Easton, registered as a Democrat in 2020, but didn't cast a ballot because he was confident Mr. Biden would win. This election is his first time voting. With Ms. Harris' experience in all three branches of government, it's a given that she should be president, he says. I feel like Trump sets a bad precedent, he says, adding that he finds the former president's rhetoric to be, quote, racist, derogatory, and dehumanizing, unquote, especially at the recent Madison Square Garden rally. Ms. Harris rallied yesterday in Allentown on the county's border, and Mr. Trump did the same in Reading. At 1:45 p.m. Eastern Time, in Georgia, turnout today is light. It's not what you think. Greetings from the Peach State, where it's Election Day light today. Over 4 million people have already voted, according to Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger. That leaves only 1.5 million to 2 million people left to vote today across the 59,000 square mile Deep South state. Small rural counties, most of them traditional Republican strongholds, will wrap up counting first, likely leading to a large Trump lead early in the evening, especially considering that some North Georgia counties, where he's expected to get over 70% of the vote. Then all eyes will turn to the five major counties around Atlanta, especially the northern suburbs where Joe Biden narrowly won the 2020 election. Key to watch will be the impact of Trump wariness in this state, where the former president tried to pressure Governor Brian Kemp to procure the votes he needed to win in 2020. In the aftermath, Georgia's Republican Party largely split into two camps, pro-Trump and anyone but Trump. Since then, elections have resulted in candidates with close ties to Mr. Trump, like Herschel Walker, losing, and candidates who have resisted Trump's gravitational pull, like Governor Kemp, winning. A snapshot of that dynamic. All of Georgia's constitutional officers are Republican, while its two U.S. senators are Democrats. A key reason Trump has been up in the polls so far in Georgia is the gender gap factor. Registered male voters are 18 percentage points more likely to vote for Mr. Trump. Female voters are 16 percentage points more likely to vote for Ms. Harris. There are more active women voters than men in Georgia. As a result, Mr. Trump's hopes in this state lie with mobilizing, quote, young, good old boys who usually don't vote, unquote, says Charles Bullock, a veteran political scientist at the University of Georgia in Athens. But the latest Time Siena poll shows that the gender gap has narrowed to nearly even. If that holds, Ms. Harris has a good shot at following in President Biden's footsteps and winning Georgia. After all, according to the Secretary of State's office, the massive early vote has been 55% women and 45% men. Finally, let's turn to a 2:37 p.m. Eastern Time report from Michigan. And this one is titled, Arab American Voters in Michigan Grapple Over the War in the Middle East. Pocketbooks determine elections, but in this part of Michigan, it could come down to foreign policy. The city of Dearborn in Michigan counts 55% of residents with Middle Eastern or North African ancestry, the largest Arab American majority city in the United States. The community has historically voted Democrat, but this year is like no other. This state spurred the uncommitted movement, which pledged not to endorse President Joe Biden in the Democratic primary over U.S. support for Israel in the war in Gaza. The movement's members are demanding a ceasefire. Two nearby mayors, in Hamtramck and Dearborn Heights, have endorsed former President Trump. Zaina Dakroub is of Lebanese descent and is playing t-ball with her grandson across from a polling station in Dearborn. "My biggest concern is my safety," she says. She's not talking about her personal safety in her home, with its tidy lawn at the corner of a leafy street lined with handsome Ford homes. "I don't feel safe in the world, and I think there's a better percentage with Trump than with Harris to put an end to the wars." The Arab American voting bloc is estimated at 200,000 here. That is bigger than the number of votes with which Mr. Trump won Michigan in 2016, that was 11,000, and lost in 2020, 154,000. Nasser al-Jarmi, of Yemeni descent, is handing out flyers for school board elections outside a polling station in this Dearborn community. He cites the exact top concerns as Ms. Dakroub: economy and foreign policy. But his vote is going for Ms. Harris, despite sharing concerns that the Democratic Party has gone too liberal on social issues, especially in schools. "I want the war to be stopped, and they are both weak on it, but I feel that Harris is more humane." Mr. Aljami says he would vote Republican, as he has in several past elections, if it were any other candidate. "Mine is a vote against Trump." Now let's turn to an article that comes to us from Washington and is submitted by Cameron Joseph, staff writer for The Monitor. His article is titled, "What Happens If Trump Tries to Overturn Another Election Loss?" In speeches, social media posts, and interviews, former U.S. President Donald Trump has been signaling that he's highly likely to challenge the election results should he lose today. The big question is, what may happen next? Mr. Trump never conceded his 2020 loss, and his extra-legal attempts to overturn that election culminated in the January 6, 2021 U.S. Capitol riot. In this campaign, he has again refused to say that he will accept the results if he comes up short, and is already making misleading claims that the vote is being rigged against him. "They're going to cheat. They cheat. That's all they want to do is cheat," Mr. Trump said at a Wisconsin rally in early October. "It's the only way they're going to win." Mr. Trump's team has been preparing for this moment for 4 years, organizing on the ground and installing allies on county election boards. The Republican National Committee has invested heavily in, quote, election integrity, unquote, efforts, training thousands of volunteers to watch for potential fraud. Trump-aligned groups have proliferated across the United States to challenge election results, including a network organized by Cleta Mitchell, who worked with Mr. Trump to try to overturn his 2020 loss. Lawsuits are being filed at a historically high rate, with more legal wrangling a near certainty. There have already been isolated incidents of campaign-related violence, intimidation, and ballot sabotage. Vice President Kamala Harris's campaign is also gearing up for a post-election battle. Ms. Harris told ABC News that her team was, quote, sadly ready to respond should Mr. Trump try to overturn the results. Yet, while post-election chaos is quite possible, 2024 is unlikely to be an exact replay of 2020. In important ways, the system has been strengthened. Congress passed legislation making clear that elected officials cannot reject the will of the voters. And states and localities have worked assiduously to harden the voting process against potential attacks. Mr. Trump also doesn't have control over the military or the Justice Department this time around, and it will be Vice President Harris, not Vice President Mike Pence, presiding over the next Electoral College count in Congress. If the election is close, we'll likely see lots of litigation as well as various efforts to challenge the legitimacy of the outcome, says Rick Pilds, a constitutional law professor at New York University. Still, he adds, I think there are many institutional, legal, and even political safeguards in place that should ensure that the lawful winner of the election actually becomes president. So what has changed since 2020? Many Americans expect Mr. Trump to reject an election loss. Two-thirds of swing state voters in a Washington Post poll released last week said they doubt the former president will accept the result if he loses this election, including more than one-third of those who plan to vote for him. A majority of swing state voters, 57%, also said that they feared Mr. Trump's supporters would respond to a loss with violence. Mr. Trump set off alarm bells among Democrats recently when he declared that he and House Speaker Mike Johnson had a, quote, little secret that could help him win, a comment many took as a hint that the House might try to overturn a Harris win. Mr. Johnson said the next day that the secret was simply, quote, one of our tactics on get out the vote, not anything, quote, diabolical. Even if House Republicans wanted to, though, it's unlikely they could block a legitimate win by Ms. Harris, thanks to a new law Congress passed in 2022. The Electoral Count Reform Act, or ECRA, made clear that the, quote, alternate elector legal theory cited by Mr. Trump's allies to try to overturn his loss in 2020 by appointing rogue slates of Electoral College electors who would back him over Joe Biden would be a legal no-go in future elections. It would take majorities in both chambers of Congress to reject the law's strictures on certification, and many Senate Republicans who backed the law will still be in office on January 6, 2025, making that an unlikely outcome. The good news is that the ECRA is a really big improvement, says Ned Foley, a constitutional and election law expert at The Ohio State University, who advised Senate negotiators who drafted the law. The whole approach of ECRA is to basically say that the rule of law controls the outcome, and that politicians cannot subvert the outcome just because they don't like it. Democrats and Republicans who have stood up to Mr. Trump currently hold the governorships and Secretary of State offices in nearly every swing state, many having defeated candidates Mr. Trump endorsed in the 2022 midterms. That means the officials who are supervising the elections and who will ultimately certify the statewide results are unlikely to side with Mr. Trump if he tries to subvert the law. The biggest risk may come if county officials refuse to certify their results. Trump supporters have attempted this in other elections in recent months. arguing that the votes had problems in their view and should be tossed out. But ECRA, as well as many state laws, have underscored that the certification of election results is not at the discretion of local officials. They would likely face judicial orders to certify or face real legal penalties, a strong motivator, though not a guarantee. Georgia's Secretary of State, Brad Raffensperger, one of the Republican officials who resisted Mr. Trump's demands to overturn their state's results in 2020, told the Monitor in late September that county officials would be forced to follow the law and certify their results, whichever candidate benefited. At the end of the day, state law is very clear, and that cannot be violated. All elections must be certified, he said. That's black letter law, and everyone has to follow state law. A 2023 U.S. Supreme Court ruling also rejected a Republican-pushed independent state legislature legal theory that would have given dramatically more power to state legislatures to set rules for federal elections. That decision lowered the chances that GOP-controlled state legislatures could successfully overturn the will of the voters should Ms. Harris win in their state. But while there are more safeguards around the election process than in 2020, a more fraught situation could still develop if the margin of victory is narrow. The 2020 election was not actually that close. All but one of the swing states went for Mr. Biden, who ultimately got 306 electoral votes, far more than the 270 needed for victory. That meant that Mr. Trump needed not just one, but several states to overturn their results, and his potential allies in any given state weren't guaranteed success, even if they went along with his efforts. No individual state was close enough to give a legal challenge much of a chance either. Recounts and court fights can swing election results, but it's almost unheard of for a state's results to change if the margin of victory is more than around 1,000 votes. The narrowest margin in 2020 was in Arizona, which went for Mr. Biden by just over 10,000 votes. A closer vote count, however, could lead to a drawn-out court battle. The 2000 election, which came down to just 537 votes in Florida, was fought in the courts and ultimately settled in a controversial decision by the U.S. Supreme Court. This year, it's clear that both sides are particularly ready for a courtroom brawl. Dozens of legal battles are already underway. On Saturday, Trump's team filed a lawsuit, falsely claiming that several Georgia counties were breaking the law by letting voters drop off ballots, only to have a judge immediately rule against it. On Friday evening, the U.S. Supreme Court dismissed a request from Republicans to overturn a Pennsylvania Supreme Court ruling allowing voters who messed up their mail ballots to be able to cast provisional ballots on Election Day. The Trump campaign sued after officials in Bucks County, Pennsylvania, closed in-person absentee voting too early. A judge extended the deadline as a result. Democrats are currently suing in Erie County, Pennsylvania, over mail ballot delays. Republicans have lost last-minute suits in multiple states seeking to tighten rules around military and overseas ballots. While the conservative-dominated U.S. Supreme Court rejected a number of last-ditch attempts to overturn Mr. Trump's loss in 2020, that doesn't mean they'd do so again in different circumstances. Democrats and voting rights advocates were alarmed last week when the High Court's conservatives ruled that Virginia could restart a purge of 1,600 voter registrations suspected of being non-citizens. The court overturned a unanimous lower court decision that had blocked the effort because it fell in the 90-day pre-election, quote, quiet period, in which federal law prohibits removing voters from the rolls, and because multiple U.S. citizens were found to have been erroneously flagged for removal. Democrats also worry about what the court might do if Republican-controlled state legislatures decide to throw out narrow wins by Ms. Harris and instead send alternate elector slates to Congress, something Mr. Trump tried and failed to get them to do 4 years ago. That is now prohibited under ECRA, but that brand new law hasn't been tested yet in court. For all of the chaos of the 2020 post-election period, Election Day itself went off fairly smoothly. This year, while early voting has been mostly trouble-free, there have been a handful of alarming, if isolated, incidents of illegal election disruption. In Oregon and Washington, someone set fire to a pair of ballot drop boxes, destroying hundreds of ballots. Footage obtained by police shows the same car at both sites. In a separate earlier incident, someone set fire to the contents of a mailbox in Arizona, damaging a handful of ballots. In Florida, police arrested an 18-year-old Trump supporter for brandishing a machete at a polling station last week. More than a dozen other cases of election-related violence, intimidation, and sabotage have been identified in recent weeks. The FBI and the Department of Homeland Security warned in a bulletin sent to state officials earlier this month that, quote, election-related grievances could motivate people to, quote, engage in violence as we saw during the 2020 election cycle, unquote. It does appear as if the Trump campaign and his allies right now are spending more time trying to create a false myth of the inevitability of his victory, says David Becker, a former Justice Department official who runs the nonpartisan Center for Election Innovation and Research. I'm worried about how that could be leveraged post-election, should Trump lose, to create a sense of shock and anger that could result in violence post-election, unquote. Now I'd like to turn to another article that comes to us from Washington, again submitted by Cameron Joseph. His article is titled, 4 months, two assassination attempts, one candidate switch, a wild election cycle. A disaster of a debate, a party in panic, a nearly successful assassination attempt of a former president on the eve of his party convention, a candidate switcheroo, another assassination attempt, a hurricane that devastated swaths of two key swing states, the successful hacking of one campaign and an aggressive disinformation campaign against the other, linked by investigators to Iranians and Russians, respectively. A deluge of dire warnings from both candidates about grave damage to the United States if the other side wins. If this election were the third installment of a movie series, critics would say it had jumped the shark. Only 131 days have passed since President Joe Biden's disastrous presidential debate set off a chain of events that forced him from the race and reshaped the battle for the White House. The intervening 4 months, especially the 107 days since he dropped out of the race and endorsed Vice President Kamala Harris as his replacement on the ticket, have been one of the more frantic campaign stretches in recent memory. Whichever candidate wins will make history, for better and worse. Ms. Harris would be the first woman, the first person of Indian descent, and just the second black person to become president. She would also be the first major party presidential nominee in more than a half century to get there without first having to run the gauntlet of a primary campaign. Democrats fell in line fast behind Ms. Harris's campaign following Mr. Biden's late departure and immediate endorsement. The last candidate to be nominated by a major party without winning over its voters in primary elections was Democrat Hubert Humphrey, who went on to lose the presidency to Richard Nixon in 1968. Former President Donald Trump would become just the second president in U.S. history to return to office after losing, and the first since Grover Cleveland in 1892. He'd also become the oldest president to enter office. He turned 78 in June and would be a few months older than President Biden was when he was inaugurated in 2021. He would also be the first convicted felon to assume the presidency, having been found guilty of 34 counts of falsifying business records related to hush money payments to keep adult film star Stormy Daniels' allegations of an affair under wraps. The judge in that New York case delayed sentencing until November 26th. That date looms if Mr. Trump loses this election. It's likely that two other criminal cases against Mr. Trump for his actions following the 2020 election, one a federal case, the other in Georgia, would begin to move once again as well. The specter of legal peril and likelihood that he wins, that if he wins it all goes away, raises the personal stakes of this election for the former president in a way that's never existed before in American politics. Ms. Harris's late entrance into the race and Mr. Trump's well-defined image from 4 years in office and a decade in the political arena made for an unusual dynamic in which both candidates sought to claim the change mantle. Mr. Trump and his team fought hard to time Ms. Harris to Mr. Biden and voters' frustration with the high inflation that cropped up during his term, running ads with clips of her praising Bidenomics. They also sought to paint her as an extreme liberal, spending heavily on ads with clips of her during her 2019 presidential primary, calling for federal prisons to offer gender-affirming care to incarcerated transgender people. Those ads concluded with the line, quote, "Kamala is for they, them, President Trump is for you," unquote. They also hammered her on border security, citing the high number of border crossings for much of the Biden-Harris administration. Ms. Harris's team prioritized introducing her to voters early in the race. Their first ads focused on her middle-class upbringing and sought to improve voters' views of her economic priorities, with spots promising that she'd work hard for the middle class. She also pivoted hard on immigration, with ads highlighting her work as California Attorney General prosecuting transnational gangs. Her campaign attacked Mr. Trump for appointing the Supreme Court justices who ended the long-standing national right to abortion access, while flaying him for promising more tax cuts to the wealthy in a second term and highlighting the numerous former Trump administration officials who have said he shouldn't be given another term in office. The final weeks of the campaign brought a sharp contrast in tone. Mr. Trump faced heavy criticism for a campaign rally at Madison Square Garden in New York, where he and multiple other speakers used harsh, controversial rhetoric, with one line from a comic calling Puerto Rico a, quote, floating island of garbage, unquote, breaking through. On Sunday, Mr. Trump seemed to joke about journalists being killed and said he shouldn't have left office in 2021. Ms. Harris delivered her closing message with a carefully orchestrated rally on the National Mall, where she rhetorically reached across the aisle, and an ad in which she promised to be a president for all Americans. In the era of modern polling, a presidential race has never appeared this close. Polling averages have regularly missed the actual result in recent presidential cycles. This year, there's a real chance that polls could be understating the support for either candidate. They might be missing supporters of Mr. Trump who aren't eager to interact with establishment pollsters. Or they might be underestimating Ms. Harris's coalition, possibly missing support from pro-abortion rights women furious over the U.S. Supreme Court's decision to overturn Roe v. Wade. But if the polls are right, it could take a long time to figure out who won this race, especially in key swing states like Arizona, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, and Nevada, where counting ballots can take longer. And if Ms. Harris narrowly prevails, Mr. Trump and his team have signaled that he's likely to claim victory on election night and, as in 2020, may try to overturn a close election loss. That would mean the 76 days from now until the presidential inauguration could be even more turbulent than the past few months. And that brings us to the conclusion of our reading today. I hope that you have enjoyed this, or at least appreciated this, devoting this entire program to our election. It's obviously a very important event taking place right now. And as I mentioned earlier, if you have not voted yet, please get out and do so. I thank you very much for joining me for readings from the Christian Science Monitor today. My name is Tom Englewitz. As always, I wish you a most pleasant, safe, and healthy day, and we invite you to please stay tuned for our next regularly scheduled program.
The content featured in this recording may not reflect the views of AfterSight or the presenter. For questions, concerns, or editorial feedback regarding the Christian Science Monitor, please contact them directly at customerservice@csmonitor.com or call 617-450-2300 Monday through Friday.
If you enjoyed this program, please register for our free services at www.aftersight.org or by calling 303-786-7777.